Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a special Decoding TV bonus episode. I am David Chen. Joining me today, you know her as at JoyoNapping online, maybe, but we call her Joy here on the podcast. Joy, thanks for chatting with me today.
Hello.
We're here today to
discuss... Hello.
We're here today to discuss the Netflix original film Scoop, which recently debuted. It is a dramatization of the events leading up to and following the Newsnight's infamous interview with Prince Andrew, which took place in 2019.
Correct.
Right? This is kind of a continuation of our coverage of The Crown. And so if you want to kind of get some context for the stuff leading up to this, be sure to listen to our episodes around The Crown, particularly season 6, all of which are on the Decoding TV feed. You can find more episodes of this podcast at wherever your podcasts are downloaded and at podcast.decodingtv.com. Email us at decodingtv@gmail.com. I'm going to put this out there. I see the download numbers, and I see people downloading these episodes where we talk about the royal family. We don't get many emails about them, though. So if you're interested in us continuing to talk about it, like, there's actually been another Prime Video series that's going to come out about this same event. You know, starring Ruth Wilson, is my understanding. And so, like,
Ruth Wilson will play the BBC interviewer.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
So, you know, if you want us to continue covering this stuff, let us know at decodingtv@gmail.com. Because my sense is people do listen to these episodes, but we don't really hear from them very much. We'd love to hear from you at decodingtv@gmail.com. So let us know. Okay. So we are going to talk about this movie, which, by the way, was directed by Philip Martin. A person who has also directed an episode of Agatha Christie's Poirot, the Murder on the Orient Express episode.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Joy is a huge fan of Poirot, so...
Yeah.
Anyway, so you've seen every episode multiple times.
I've seen every adaptation of Murder on the Orient Express in the English language. That is multiple times.
Yes.
I think that's the best one. It's controversial, but it's the best one.
Yeah. All right. So let's talk a little bit about our context around this Prince Andrew interview before even watching this
movie. How much did you know about this previously?
Yeah. I had seen the most of the actual interview itself, if not the whole thing. And it struck me as like a very disastrous interview. He was making all these wild claims like...
And how did you... How did that even come to be? Is it like because clips were surfacing?
Yeah, because it went super viral. So in 2019, Prince Andrew did this interview where he tried to explain his connection to notorious sex trafficker Jeffrey Epstein, right? And Prince Andrew, by the way, is a son of Queen Elizabeth, not the heir to the throne, but apparently her favorite child and somebody who still had a lot of power, titles, and money in the United Kingdom.
He had one of those three. But okay. Yeah.
So anyway, when he did this interview, which is supposed to help to exonerate him or at least for him to tell his side of the story, I remember watching it and feeling like he was making all these bizarre claims and that the interview went disastrously. Like, he was saying things like, oh, I couldn't have been at that place because I was at a pizza place that night. And it's like, okay, that's random. I couldn't have been dancing. I can't sweat. You know, I have a condition that makes you sweating. Or at least, I couldn't sweat at the time. And so those all struck me as extremely bizarre and very weird and apparently went rather poorly because Prince Andrew ended up getting all his titles stripped from him as a result of this interview. So that's basically what I knew. And then I heard that the events would be dramatized in this documentary. And of course, we've been talking about The Crown on Decoding TV. So I was looking forward to the opportunity to revisit these events and hopefully learn more about them. Joy, any context you want to provide before we get to our conversation?
Well, like you, I had only seen it in pieces until, like, in the past few days to prepare for this, I watched it end to end because I suspected it felt different as a continuous.
Yeah, and how long is it?
48 minutes.
Yeah.
And it does. And then I actually also read up, like, I watched a TED talk by Sam McAllister, who's really basically the protagonist of this movie, mm-hmm. Scoop. She's a BBC producer. And, have learned quite a bit more about Prince Andrew, who is, I think I knew the broad outlines, but the details are pretty ick. So
yeah.
I have immersed myself in that for you, the viewer, so that you don't have to.
Yeah.
Or the listener, rather.
Okay, so the big question I think we should start with is, do you think this movie is interesting to people who don't care about the royal family?
Well, that was actually going to be my first question
yeah,
for
let's
you.
Start, let's start with that.
Because I am so soaked in it, I almost can't.
Yeah.
See it independently?
I don't think it is. I think it's not a bad film, but I think you and I commented when we watched the film, it's basically like an episode of The Crown.
It's so similar to The Crown.
It's similar to The Crown in terms of style, in terms of like the way Crown episodes would be structured, where you're introduced to this side character that then, you know, their journey and then how it impacts the royal family. Like, it's very similar to The Crown. And so if you're a fan of The Crown, I think you will quite enjoy this.
Yeah, you know? This is like the coda. It's like,
yes.
Oh, we got up through this kind of random ending point. That's yeah. how we ended the show. But here's like an extra bonus,
yes.
extremely lascivious episode that we can't leave out.
Right.
About one of the characters you had already met.
Yeah, so I think your interest in this movie can best be captured by whether or not you're interested in The Crown at all. And so if you're interested in The Crown, I think you'll probably like this movie. And if you're not at all interested in The Crown, I don't think you will.
I would go a step further. I almost think it can't be enjoyed without the context that something like The Crown provides.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's really not explained who's the Duke of York exactly.
Right. Yeah.
It's not really explained what are the stakes attached
right.
to this other
yeah.
than the crimes themselves.
Yeah.
And so you don't understand the whole, like, Windsor family 100 years of repression of never explain, never complain, never explain, you know, in quite the same way, or how the palace functions. And so I think it actually is surprisingly light on depictions of the royal family itself.
And it's weird because they have the opportunity to do that. They could have some audience surrogate, like, you know, at the very beginning of this movie, they say, oh, this is based on real events, but some aspects have been fictionalized, which, by the way, is something The Crown should have also done. I'm just going to maintain that.
Yeah.
But I appreciated that they're like, hey, this is going to be pretty controversial, and so we're just going to clear it off the bat that FYI, we made some shit up for this thing. And so I appreciated that they did that. But you could have had an intern is going to work at the BBC today. And now we need to explain everything to her or him and explain, like, oh, why is it, who is Prince Andrew? Why is this important? You know, like, none of those questions are really answered. They just assume that you know all that stuff. I did get a text from a friend of mine who is also a critic this morning. After Scoop came out, we're recording this like right after the movie has been released on Netflix, and he says, I don't think I'm supposed to be bored to death by this movie, Scoop. Like, I don't think this is supposed to be that boring.
Is this person someone who, like, watches The Crown or has interest in
no,
the royals?
Okay, no.
Well, I think that is this is the problem.
Yeah.
This is the core problem.
Yeah.
The stakes of this movie,
yeah, yeah,
you would think would either be A, the kids who were sex trafficked. It's been a hard, I'm sorry, I'm a little emotional about this saying it because it's been a hard week. I also watched most of Quiet on Set,
yep.
which is the docuseries about Nickelodeon and like the abusive culture and behaviors that were enabled or actively allowed there. So I've just had a lot of really dark content, you know, that I've been sitting in, but like that is like the number one thing, right? That is the most important and story here. And then maybe the second most important story to the world is how did this impact the royal family? But because this movie is not interested deeply in either of those questions,
yeah.
like it sort of touches a little bit on the first thing and
right.
almost none on the second, it makes the stakes kind of like about this single mom who's not from a posh background getting more credit at the BBC in the newsroom while they're undergoing layoffs.
Yeah.
And that is just something I don't give a fuck about compared to the first two things.
It's hard to really feel too emotionally invested in that. I mean, you compare this to a movie like Spotlight. I think this and Spotlight are both kind of covering very similar ground.
Yeah. Great comparison.
But Spotlight won Best Picture and is an excellent movie. And
Spotlight is heart-wrenching and so it's thrilling in its own way.
Right, right. And it's about, you know, Spotlight, I would say, is about the journalistic process, like what it takes to actually do journalism, the mind-numbing aspects of it. But it also contextualizes like the sexual crimes of the Catholic Church, in this broader context that makes it more significant. And I don't think the movie Scoop on Netflix does any of that stuff. It's just a very kind of, hey, here's a little bit of stuff that led up, like the process that led up to this big thing happening. That's kind of how I felt after watching the movie. I also think that this movie does fall prey to this. I mean, it a little bit falls prey to this to leaning on your pre-existing knowledge of the event, because it's building up to this interview as though it's like really a big deal,
right? Right.
And it does do some work to like lay that track to explain like why it is a big deal.
Yeah, but it's not like 9/11. It's not like everyone in the world knows.
Right.
Exactly. What happened.
And so I think it leans a little bit probably too heavily on your potential knowledge of this interview being a big deal. But all that said, I didn't think it was a bad movie or anything like that.
Well,
it almost
wasn't a movie. It wasn't like a standalone movie. Like, we just finished recapping The Crown season 6. We've been deep in the Kate Middleton thing, you know, so we've been thinking about this. It's almost an episode of a, it's only like a one episode show.
Yeah.
Which is like a very different thing.
Right.
And I get that you have to pick the stakes to be something, because you maybe can't take a point of view about whether Andrew really did these things without getting sued into oblivion.
Yeah.
But if you're going to go there, then you really need to make me care about the journalists and what they do every day. And even that felt like they mostly just kind of lucked into the interview, which I don't think is true.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I think they even made it seem a little bit more like just fortune smiled on them and it's all just a colossal error by Andrew.
Hmm.
What do you think? Do you agree with that?
No, not necessarily. I wouldn't go that far. But what I would agree with is that I don't think it's hard to make memorable characters in a movies. Like, just period, the end. Like, that is hard to do. And they tried to do that in this movie by making these producers and journalists into that. And I think they were limited in their success in that. And that is the big problem with the movie, I think.
Well, Sam McAllister, in her 15-minute-ish TED Talk about getting this interview, talked about how her job is to get no 99 times to get a one yes. And she is only going after people who probably will say no by design, because they are not going to want their side of the story aired on what is like a combo of 60 minutes in the PBS NewsHour, like the most serious journalism and least friendly forum possible. And how she has to have really, really thick skin, and how she just kept at it and kept at it in a much more elaborate way than is even shown. And I would have loved to have seen her failing, 99 times to get, not literally, but do you know what I mean? To just get more of a sense
of more texture of what her job was like. Yeah, for sure. Well, anyway, let's talk about the details of the movie. But I think overall, fair to say that if you're not already familiar with the details around this situation, if you're not into the workings of the royal family, this probably isn't a movie you'll find particularly engaging. Is that right?
I think so. And I think unfortunately, your time might be better spent watching the 47 minutes interview unedited, because it's truly shocking.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, if you are interested in those things, I would say it's very reasonable way to spend your time. Like, if you have watched all the seasons of The Crown, it's very reasonable to watch Scoop. You know, if you want a little more context about how this happened, it's very reasonable to.
It's a perfectly reasonable sit.
It's perfectly reasonable. So anyway, those are some overall thoughts on the Netflix movie Scoop.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
All right, let's talk about what actually happened in the movie. And as we talked about, the movie begins with the BBC announcing a bunch of layoffs. All sectors of the media around the world are being hit hard by macroeconomic factors, it seems. But one of the people that works there, Sam McAllister, right? She didn't get laid off, and she is just hustling, trying to find some interesting people to interview for the BBC. Meanwhile, she feels like she's an outsider amongst these hardcore journalists because her job is seen as more fluffy, and she's a single mom who's struggling to raise her child at home, her son.
Oh, you think her job is seen as more fluffy? That's interesting.
Well, because like she's introduced saying like, hey, let's get Lupita Nyong'o on the show to talk about colorism. And people like shut her down a little bit. They're like, yeah, okay, we can have that on the second half of the show, but it's not news. And so I think she struggles throughout the film to earn the respect of her colleagues. That's,
yes.
That is very much the arc of her character.
I wouldn't have used fluffy, but I understand
sure.
What you're saying.
Yeah.
But basically, it is a mirror. Again, like I think if you are dropped into this movie without having seen, say, The Crown or been in the UK and observed this, there is this backdrop that the media landscape is brutally competitive over there. And there is a tabloidization of all the news at this time frame, so that even the more staid broadsheet newspapers end up getting pulled towards gossipy celebrity type culture more and coverage because of the types of papers owned by Rupert Murdoch.
Yeah.
And the BBC, which is the granniest of them all, it's like a very PBS NPR analog if you're in the United States, is really feeling the pressure of how their quote-unquote hard-hitting news is feeling less and less relevant. So the idea that she pitches about Lupita Nyong'o and colorism is actually quite an important and serious topic.
Mm. But yeah,
but because it has any whiff of celebrity, it's like,
right.
Oh, well, then
right.
That's not real.
Yeah.
And it's actually, I think, it's meant to be a class thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
That she's clearly not from a more posh background.
Mm-hmm.
She wears like giant designer labels really prominently, but she can't buy her way into class and respectability.
Wow, there's more layers to this movie than I originally gave credit for.
I really thought Billy Piper did a great job.
I think so too, yeah.
Because she comes in with the kind of armor of this like very flashy outfits and comes in whenever she wants, and it feels like a power move. But when you see that she's actually feeling incredibly vulnerable all the time, I really, really believed it.
Yeah.
And seeing her sort of slumped and feeling really defeated and anxious with that giant Chanel pin on her shoulder, it was actually like really moving to me.
Hmm. All right. So that's kind of the main – she's the essentially the protagonist of – the movie,
yeah,
right? And so how much you can relate to her or invest in her story is like, you know, the success of the movie kind of hangs on it. And I think, as you indicated in our opening, like a lot of people might find it difficult to really invest.
Just because you
much.
Know this other bomb is coming and you're
right.
waiting for that thing.
It's like she's not why I'm watching. Like this person I'd never heard about. Like it's not why I fictional random person watching this movie started watching it. So, but. Yeah, she is able to convince Prince Andrew's press office to get him to agree to an interview. Now, Rufus Sewell plays Prince Andrew.
Oh, before we leave Billy Piper entirely, do you know much about her?
No.
So she was a child star.
Hmm.
she was a singer, and mm-hmm. she became famous like pretty much at the same age Britney Spears became famous, like mm-hmm. 14, 15. And she retired from music before she hit 20. And I think there's something, and became more of an actor. But I think there's probably something that she can relate to about the whole situation. And for me, the most poignant part of this movie, which I really wish they had gone more into, is she is looking at a school. She's on a bus and she's looking at a bunch of girls who mm-hmm. are yeah. 13, 14, who are just hanging around and goofing. And she is obviously, you're meant to believe as the viewer that she's thinking about the women that have been trafficked, or the girls right. that have been trafficked, who are this age and ought to be having this kind of childhood. And for me, that was like poignant, knowing that Billie Piper herself has yeah. been through something like that.
I would say the film has a handful of really nice flourishes, of which that was actually one of them, right?
Yeah.
When it's pretty subtle. Like, she's just on the bus, she's talking to a friend of hers, and then she just sees these girls playing in the background, and she doesn't make some speech about it, or she's not like, I can't stop thinking, you know,
yeah.
looking at these girls, I can't stop thinking, you know, they're just there, and it's yeah. just kind of part of the texture of the movie, and I like that. And there's a couple of other moments like that, too, like... for instance, there's a part where both of the characters in the interview, Emily Maitlis and also Prince Andrew, are prepping for the interview.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And it intercuts between the two yeah. of them prepping. And I thought that was like a nice sort of, you know, just kind of a cool way to depict that process. And then the interview itself was like pretty well done, I thought. A lot of nice touches there, particularly towards the end of the interview. So
another one for me is there's a shot where they, I think it's Emily Maitlis, Esme Ward, and so that's Emily, the kind of the person who runs Newsnight.
Yeah.
And Sam McAllister are on the elevator together.
Yeah.
And they think that maybe this interview is being spiked.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you can see that these like three women, like the visual is just very striking that mm-hmm. it's three women. And then later, you know, two of them go to the opera to like talk to the head
right.
of the BBC urgently. And that is also a woman, like the head of news.
Yeah, yeah.
And it really feels like this axis of women are going to do something about this shit.
Mm-hmm.
Like the bare minimum we can do
right.
is ask people, what the fuck? What is your side of this? Like, mm-hmm. please stand to account. And, you know, again, it wasn't incredibly like a hit you over the head, but when Emily Maitlis says, I really wish I had done more for Monica Lewinsky
yeah.
when Bill, you know, like I think we all feel that in just the passage of time in our lives, if you're an adult now,
mm-hmm.
Like how much we were complicit. And I was a feminist, you know, and I was complicit in that too. And I feel awful about it. So yeah,
yeah, anyway, and it was pretty shocking also to see the Bill Clinton and Monica Lewinsky dress painting that was apparently
yeah,
owned by Jeffrey
real.
Epstein. That you know, yeah, I didn't know about that painting, and it was upsetting to see. You know?
Yeah,
but Rufus Sewell,
yeah.
plays Prince Andrew, and I think we got to talk a little bit about this because, on the one hand, I think pretty impressive prosthetics slash costuming job to get him to look like even remotely close to Prince Andrew. Because Rufus Sewell, good-looking man, attractive man.
Good-looking, right? But also a bit on the gaunt side, you know, mm-hmm. a bit on the, like, hollow, bony side.
A little bit of a bony side, whereas Prince Andrew is a little bit more doughy, right?
These days, especially, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And what did you think of this depiction?
It was fine. I think Rufus Sewell is really, really capable. I certainly think the prosthetics like worked for me so that I was not constantly yeah. thinking,
oh, that's Rufus Sewell in prosthetics. Right?
I mean, as a perfect comparison, Gillian Anderson in The Crown playing Margaret Thatcher, I was constantly
yeah,
thinking,
yeah, it's very distracting.
Oh, there's Gillian Anderson putting on a Margaret Thatcher outfit,
right?
Putting on a Margaret Thatcher accent,
right.
putting on a Margaret Thatcher wig. You can't lose her Gillian Anderson-ness in
right,
it.
Right, correct.
I felt very differently about her in this.
Yeah, she was fine, if not very good.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah.
I wish she'd been given a little more to do.
Yeah.
But so for me, it wasn't distracting at all, and I was quite concerned initially when I saw
right.
the casting. I find his portrayal of Andrew to be, I mean, it's just a choice. It's a choice to make him sort of a mournful, overgrown boy.
Yes.
Who's a little sullen and out of his league and overweened.
Yeah. I agree with you that the look of it was not very distracting, but it's not a very interesting depiction, in my opinion. The thing is, when I watched the interview with Prince Andrew that this film is based off of, I thought, that is a weirdo. Like, that's a weird dude. And everything I've learned about him since reinforces that idea. And I don't mean to downplay his actual crimes or anything like that, like, which have not been, I think, fully proven in a court of law in any way. Right? Like,
he settled, so
we don't know. But, like, it seems very likely that he did some bad things, but, like, you know, allegedly. But when I saw him, I was like, that is a weird-ass dude that...
Say more.
Well, making just these outlandish claims, like... The way he answered the questions in the interview was weird. I mean, this is why the movie's made. The way...
Well, just say more about what weird means to you.
Yeah. He made some bizarre claims during the interview, and then you need to have a certain mindset to think that that is okay, right? Like, and I think the movie depicts, and his team clearly believed that, yeah, this is fine. This is okay to go out there like this. So I think... That's the weird part. It's not, oh, someone said a weird thing in the interview, but like that you think, oh, this actually makes me look fine. Anyone who feels that way about the interview is weird or off in some way. And that's what I didn't like about this, or felt was missing from this depiction is, you put it very well. I would describe 95% of this portrayal as sullen. He's just a very sullen, overgrown boy. But there's nothing that weird about him. In fact, the weirdest part is the interview itself. You know, like, he doesn't really indicate... I didn't feel like the character we saw pre the interview and then the character in the interview were the same person, honestly, like, in this movie.
Interesting. You know?
I felt like, oh, that's the weird guy I saw from the interview in real life when I watched the interview portion of Scoop. And then the rest of the time, it was just like, oh, it's Rufus Sewell in prosthetics being sullen, you know? Yeah, well, it didn't quite work for me as a whole character.
I don't know Andrew in real life, mm-hmm. but I think this was an incredibly kind portrayal.
Mm-hmm.
And it felt similar to my reaction to The Crown, which is that sometimes I prefer it when they pick a point of view, even if it is a lacerating point of view for an individual person. Of course, I'm not the person getting lacerated, but, you know, like... all of these events have, you know, multiple sides of the story that are being shopped around, right? But I wish they had just picked something more believable as to how this person could have risen to this point or gotten to this point. But it felt a little paint by numbers, you know. So first he did this, then this email was sent, and then this meeting occurred.
Who's this person you're talking about, Prince Andrew?
Andrew. He is undercharacterized despite being the center. Because to your point, he actually is not believable as in the first half of the movie versus the person who you see get interviewed, right?
Right, yeah.
And that is because he's so much fucking worse in real life, according to everybody. But they pulled their punches on it, just like The Crown pulled its punches on having Queen Elizabeth actually ever be shown really in a very undignified position, right? Mm-hmm. Because they don't...
Yeah.
There still feels like there's a fear of the royals coming after you.
Right, yeah.
And this man had a minor temper tantrum, this character in the story. He was a little curt the day that the news, bad news breaks about Jeffrey Epstein and his teddy bears are not arranged the way that he wants them to be.
Yeah.
In real life, it was supposedly much worse that he would scream and shout at the maids, but it was every day you know, you didn't need much to set him off. And he had the temper tantrums constantly and was constantly berating members of the staff and the security, et cetera, if they didn't give him extra privileges. There's a former bodyguard or a police protection officer for the royal household who has gone on record, including, you know, years ago before all this came out, saying they're all pretty much people. But only one of them is a major asshole, and it's Andrew.
Right. And I think if you'd seen that, it would make the interview kind of make a little more sense. It would kind
Absolutely.
Of lock the place, the image would lock into place a little bit more.
Yes.
I think the sort of softening of Andrew's image in the film can best be summed up by the fact that in reality, how many stuffed animals does he have?
72.
And I think we saw at most like 2 dozen.
Thank you. Yes.
On
literally
his bed.
Stuffed animal erasure. And I won't stand for it.
Yeah. They show these stuffed animals. I think you're supposed to be like, ha, that's so weird that he has 21. The dude has 72 stuffed animals.
It is much, much, much weirder in real life. A former maid has said, well, first of all, I think this is quite well known, that he had a laminated card made to explain where each of the different animals goes.
As you do, yeah.
One of them is called Daddy. So, like, right there, I feel like there's a lot of issues. There's, like, little mahogany thrones for two of them. Like, two of them are the most special. And there's sort of a rotation. You know, he would sort of rearrange and then expect you to keep up with that. And you'd have, like, a whole day of training if you joined the staff about, like, how, in what order the stuffies are supposed to go. I did not think this depiction of the stuffed animal thing was the best I have seen recently. The best, I would say, is in the season opener
of girls,
season 3 of Girls 5 Eva, which is phenomenal.
Yes, very good. Okay, so yeah, they really, it didn't work as a cohesive overall presentation, like characterization of this person, Rufus Sewell's performance, but it was fine. It wasn't like actively bad and distracting.
Maybe in 20 years or 30 years or 40 years, if he passes away, we'll feel like we have the distance to say, because this is actually a really interesting person. This is what happens when you are given privilege but no role.
Yeah.
You're fawned upon, by the parents, which Charles certainly wasn't.
Right.
You have a complete, I think he's not super bright.
Mm-hmm.
So he's asked to do all of this like economic development work, which seems perfect. Like go represent Britain in other countries and like cut ribbons and be at meetings with dignitaries who will probably say yes because you're there, you know, and then trade will flow or something. But then he like literally can't remember the basics of how trade works. He literally doesn't know the difference between the public sector and the private. So he's just really not cut out for any of this. And so what would happen if you were permanently infantilized? What is the size of a monster you could become? And I wouldn't say this is the upper bound, but it's pretty bad. And I think we should all be asking ourselves, it's not even like nature versus nurture. It's like just the force of environment on a person.
Yeah. And it's a huge bummer that we don't get that characterization in this movie, you know, because this would be a prime opportunity to depict that kind of person. But the movie whiffs it there. Let's talk about the actual interview itself. I thought they obviously recreate segments of the actual interview in this movie, Scoop, right? Not the whole thing, but like a substantial part of it. And there's some really cool, nice touches to this section. The prep to it, I appreciated. I thought the interview itself did a pretty good job of recreating. Although, again, I don't think it fully captured how weird Prince Andrew was in the actual interview itself, in my opinion. But it was pretty close. You know, I would say it's like 90% of the way there. But
it certainly captured all the most salacious and stupid claims that he made.
Right.
The one about the sweating, the one about the Pizza Express.
Yes.
I don't even know where the bar is, and I've never paid for a drink there.
What is great about it is you get the sense that no one on the royal family side understands how bad the interview is going, right? There's like the Queen's press officer is there, Prince Andrew's press officer is there, and they're all watching what's going down, and they're like, this is going great. And meanwhile, the BBC people are there, and they're horrified at what they're watching. They're like, this is, I can't believe he's saying all this on tape. I can't believe we're recording this right now. They get the compact flash card. I think they're compact flash. I'm not 100% sure. I think they're compact flash cards. They're shooting on like a Canon cinema camera. He's like, I got to put this compact flash card in this case. I've used that exact flash card and the case before.
Oh, I can only picture him like trembling on the bicycle as he rode away.
Don't use a motorcycle. It's too important. Anyway. And he's like, yeah, we have 2 copies of this. We got to get it off to the thing. And then afterwards, there's this amazing moment when Prince Andrew's press officer like interrupts and says, hey, can we just make sure that you say that it was that night? And Prince Andrew's like, no, we don't need to do that. Like, I think this interview is going great. Don't you, Emily Maitlis? You know, and it's like there's just such a disconnect between the royal family and their press officers and reality, which I have to say, unfortunately, I don't think has improved very much in the last 5 years.
I must tell you, I think, again, it was all of that and worse in real life. So it's true that he walked away feeling like that crushed it.
Crushed it.
Finally.
Crushed it.
Finally.
Slam dunk.
I got to tell my side of the story. I think that I've read that the BBC wanted to take out the Pizza Express thing because they were concerned about how much ridicule it would subject him to. And I think Andrew's people fought to keep it in.
Uh-huh.
Because they're like, look, concrete details that he couldn't have been somewhere else 6 hours earlier.
So let's explain that, right? There's this, he is alleged to have been spending time with this woman that night. Is that correct, right?
Yes.
And he said, well, I couldn't have been there because I was at the Pizza Express that night. And
in Woking.
In Woking. But the thing is, the time frame he gives for that is 6 hours earlier than when he's alleged to have spent time with that woman, right?
Well, it's not quite that. I mean, there's right. like a version of events where, like, if he stayed at the whole thing at the Pizza Express, then maybe it's possible.
Right, but it was not like 100%.
100% of her timeline that she laid out.
Right. It was not like completely exculpatory, right? Let's put it that way. Is that accurate to say?
Yes, that is right. That is right.
Right.
And also, there's no evidence he was at the Pizza Express. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't have been impossible, but it's not. I mean, to be fair, his daughter was 12, you know, and she was attending like a birthday thing after a theater performance. So, like, you know, apparently in their social circle, it was common to go to Pizza Express after, like, the kids liked it. But yeah, it's pretty rough.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, I think the biggest thing that I remember from the actual interview itself is his claim that, the woman who claims that he slept with her, right?
Virginia Jeffrey,
right? She says, like, oh, yeah, we went to a club and we danced the night away and he was very sweaty. And he's like, well, I can't sweat, actually, or I couldn't at the time because of this injury I sustained in the Falklands. And
that was the grossest single thing.
In what sense?
I don't know about a temporary 15-year no-sweat injury, you know? I myself actually happen to have an actual impaired sweat capacity, so I do know a little bit about this, and I think it's implausible, but don't know. I'm not a doctor. But the idea that he's like, so consistently trying to refute details mm-hmm. without addressing the core issue, which is like, who cares whether you sweated or not? Were you dancing with the girl?
Mm-hmm.
And also, it feels like an excuse to bring up the one thing that makes him incredibly popular. The height of his public profile mm-hmm. was when he was, in fact, a very good helicopter pilot in the Falklands War.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of this thing where one hallmark of people who are lying often is that the story is too specific, right? Now, this is not always true, but often liars, when they recount events, it's too specific because most people don't remember that many details. And
even if you ended up accused and were in a deposition and then you had to like tear through your diary and try to recreate what happened, you think you couldn't?
Well, I think that his logic is, oh, there's all this exculpatory information, couldn't sweat, was at the Pizza Express, and like surely when people see this stuff, they will believe me.
Yeah.
Now,
I think he could be right about all that and still have had sex with a minor who was trafficked.
A, that's true. B, right. So, you know, A, that's true. And B, I don't think he like... They didn't run these answers by like a normal person of the public to be like, what would you think if Prince Andrew said he couldn't sweat? You know, it's just he didn't understand how it would come off. That's the problem. He didn't understand how it would come off.
It right? felt in watching the entire thing for the 48-minute version, a Taylor's version, that it felt so legalistic. It felt so like he was prepped to say things that were technically accurate as much as possible while effectively being evasive through technical accuracy and had no actual human heart
right.
underneath
no
it.
No remorse for the victims in this situation. Who had been grievously harmed by his
or even knowledge maybe that sex crime is a crime, or that, you know, like there's really like just no scale of like comprehension, that it's not like said a swear word out loud in front of the queen, because he says it was behavior unbecoming, you know, of Jeffrey Epstein. My very favorite thing in the interview is Emily Maitlis is very well prepared, and she says, isn't it true that you threw a birthday party for Ghislaine Maxwell? And he says, a birthday party? No, it was a shooting weekend. It was a straightforward shooting weekend.
Oh, yeah, it's just a shooting weekend. Yeah, it's
like, do you know totally how much different. Is involved in a shooting weekend? Mm-hmm. Like, for each person who goes out and shoots, there have to be, like, hounds and people who, like, reload. Like, it is not a party that you and I could throw. Like, that is not available to the rest of us. Mm-hmm. So it's an extremely elite thing, and you have people come from all over, you know, to join. And maybe it's only 10 people or 30 people, but it's not 600. But I think he has this idea that a party is like 600 people.
Right. Yeah.
And like, again, fails to get the implication of like you were cozying up to and lavishing an expensive thing on somebody who is a real fucking predator.
Yeah. There's a similar moment. Honestly, a moment that I had forgotten about was when, after Jeffrey Epstein had already been found guilty of certain things, the question is asked, why did you fly to meet him after that? And he says, oh, I went to fly to meet him to tell him, this friendship is over, Jeffrey Epstein. And then she says, well, you were still the guest of honor at a party that he threw to celebrate getting out of prison. And he's like, party? What are you talking about? And he's like, you know, she's like, wasn't there a party? And he's like, oh, well, there was a dinner.
It was only like eight to ten people.
That's not a party. You know, I think you're right about the party thing being like 600 people. And then she's like, so you stayed at his house for like, what was it, 4 nights or whatever?
Yeah.
And she says, why did you do that? And he says, well, because it was convenient, okay? and it was like, I had forgotten how shocking that was, because the question, I think the way she phrases it is like, why did you stay at the house of a convicted sex offender? And he's like, well, because it was a convenient place to stay. And he's very snappy about it too. And that was very incriminating.
So here's the thing that the film could have shown that didn't. It is believed that Prince Philip is one of the people who told him you should go break it off in person. That it is more honorable with these like long-term allegiances, you know, to and Jeffrey Epstein is not.
Prince Philip is who in relation again?
His dad.
Yeah.
Queen Elizabeth's husband.
Yes.
And you know, really like a very stern,
right,
authoritarian figure. So they chose not to throw Philip under the bus. You know, he says it was family and friends and advisors, you know, and there's people telling me in both directions that I shouldn't go. But he said, I wanted to be able to say at the end that I had done the honorable thing. This is what he says in the real interview. And it's really amazing that he lives in a world where this was the honorable thing to do. Like, this meeting could have been an email for sure.
should have been to the benefit of everyone, you know, would have been.
Or ghosting.
I guess not, because then we wouldn't have this interview, or the interview wouldn't be as damning, right?
But the other thing where I think they go a little bit harder at it is the photojournalist. So we start this movie with the photojournalist, right?
Yes.
Actually, not at the BBC, but yeah. And so the paparazzi is like staking out the house and is seeing all these young girls. Well, one young girl in particular come out of the house. And it's the same time that Andrew then comes out. He doesn't get the photo of Andrew and Epstein because a van blocks his way. But he gets the photo in the park.
Yeah.
So he can't exactly link it as closely photographically. And of course, the photos are incredibly powerful evidence in the sort of public imagination here. But the implication is that, of course, it hadn't stopped.
That
Andrew's involvement in this had not stopped.
Right.
Virginia Joffre just happens to be the person who fucking spoke about it. But I cannot believe, if I believe her, I can't believe it's an isolated incident.
What did you think about the movie's decision to not include any of the women's voices in this? Because like, they're not dramatized at all in this film. And I thought that was kind of an interesting choice. You know, like during the interview, we find out what Virginia, I think is her name, right? What Virginia has testified to in the past. And we don't see any of that. They really just wanted to confine it to the scope of the events leading up to the interview at the BBC.
We don't see the Queen. We don't see Prince Philip. We really don't see anybody. Certainly we don't see Charles. I am fine with that. I don't know that I think I get it. You know, when I see the girls on the bus, it's that it's about all girls.
Yeah. Yeah. So the movie kind of ends fairly abruptly, I think. We see the result of the interview, people reacting to it on social media, and then some text on the screen explains Prince Andrew settled, victims of Jeffrey Epstein are still trying to get justice. We learn a little bit about what happened to the people who set the interview up, and that's basically
it. See, this is my biggest whiff on the stakes, if you're going to focus on the Windsors part of it. Andrew's broke. Andrew is famously, famously broke. And so they don't talk about that at all. Number one, he isn't given a big allowance. Number two, he lives in far excess of it. Number three, he's the most spoiled. So out of all the entourage, all the royals, when they travel, he's the one that claims the biggest hotel suites, the most ridiculous stuff has to go with him, the most aides, etc. He's more spoiled than Charles. He's more spoiled, you know, like, and will find a way to make the taxpayer foot the dime for that, or say would be very, very susceptible to wealthy friends. Why would he be accepting Jeffrey Epstein's house? Because he's lazy and he's dumb and he's like, that's the nicest house. Like, that is the most generous explanation I can give that is believable about Andrew.
Mm-hmm.
Like, not because there's a parade of young girls that he can take advantage of, but because he's so easily seduced by just the trappings,
yeah,
of flying on the private jets and going right to the private islands, because he wants that lifestyle but cannot afford it. Mm-hmm. His wife was so in debt that Jeffrey Epstein paid off her debts. You know about that.
Mm-mm.
Oh, so Fergie also, his wife, Sarah Ferguson, who he got divorced from, but they're still very close, like basically cannot afford to live on her own and has had to take all these deals, like promoting dinnerware in America or a QVC line or Weight Watchers. Do you remember she was a Weight Watchers spokesperson?
Nope, but
wow. That sounds plausible. Okay, $2 million a year, Weight Watchers spokesperson. And she used all of that money to eventually sort of pay down her considerable debts, because she's just a really, really lavish spender. And to this day, she still lives on the Queen's property because she can't afford, like, one that she's basically mm-hmm. given, because she can't afford to move out on her own. So she and Andrew kind of basically live together, even though they're not married. They're like besties and co-parent and, you know, fine.
So
my point is, these are people who are deeply in hock and have to do increasingly unsavory things.
Mm-hmm.
Each of them have a huge fucking scandal attached to them on their finances front. For Sarah Ferguson, she was caught by a reporter impersonating a foreign royalty who said, can you basically get me an intro to Andrew? And he was called like the fake shake. And he was like, for £500,000, she said, you can wire it. Like, it was caught on tape. You can wire me £500,000 and you can have all the access you want.
So I see.
It's just like a pay for access.
She offered the thing that she wasn't supposed to offer, right? Yep.
And she was an ex at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And then Andrew himself sold his house famously for £3 million over the list price,
mm-hmm.
when there were no competing bids to, I think, a former Soviet Republic oligarch.
Mm-hmm.
So suffice it to say, there's just so much like shadiness and indebtedness and favors owed and like, you know, just increasing desperation to keep up with this lifestyle that they are addicted to, that you can easily see why somebody like Jeffrey Epstein ends up being very tempting to Andrew, not pictured in this movie. And therefore, when that final title card comes and it says, Andrew settled supposedly for £12 million, the big question is, who the fuck paid that tab? He doesn't have £12 million. He doesn't have £1 million. So there's only a handful of people that could be. And I don't know if I want to get into my conspiracy theories here, but I feel that there's really only two. There's really only two humans that could have paid it. And
I see. So the documentary misses an opportunity to...
It's not a documentary.
Oh, sorry. What did I say? I don't know why I said documentary. The movie misses the opportunity to lay out some context around why Andrew might have behaved the way he did,
And it would be character development, right?
Yes.
To understand, like, you know people that live beyond their means, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it is just like a habit you want to like shake them. It has to do somewhat with the childishness. I think it goes hand in hand with that and the irresponsibility. And so finally has to really suffer the humiliation of the ultimate bailout to get him out of this situation.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Anything else you want to say about Scoop on Netflix?
I mean, are you going to watch another Prime Video 3-part series about this?
Well, that's a tough question. Apparently there's going to be another 3-part series about this. There's a couple of things that distinguish that one from this. First of all, Emily Maitlis is actually involved in that one. She was not involved in this one, although she was completely fine with it. There's no like bad blood or anything. This movie was based off of Newsnight editor Sam McAllister's book Scoops, behind the scenes of the BBC's most shocking interviews, whereas like the other one will be presumably like Emily Maitlis telling her side of the story. Also, Ruth Wilson plays Emily Maitlis in the other one, and I'm a big Ruth Wilson fan, so that might be enough to motivate me.
I think so. Sam McAllister is an executive producer on this Netflix film. Like,
yeah.
I think actually the weakness of it is that she's the central character.
Mm-hmm,
because I actually think Emily Maitlis, from what I understand, did way, way, way more work. She did not land the interview, but she did way more prep in parallel just in case it would come along. Like,
right.
It's a little weird to have it from two different people's perspectives that were right next to each other. But
so, yeah, that 3-part series will come out. The question for you, Decoding TV listener, is do you want us to talk about it? Let us know at decodingtv@gmail.com. Otherwise, we probably we'll still talk about it anyway, just not on mic. So,
well, I do have a closing thought.
Yeah, please.
I don't want people to think that everyone who has a large stuffed animal collection as a grown adult is a predator. Okay? I don't think.
Yes. That's very important for Joy to let people know.
I think
about.
It's okay if the animals have distinct names, personalities, backstories, outfits, and places in the home. And, you know, I don't even think that necessarily means you're stunted developmentally, you know, like, so let's just not conflate those, because that is one of the major pieces of evidence that this film gives that something is wrong with Andrew. But what's wrong with him is all the other stuff we've talked about. And this is maybe the best thing about him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So when it comes to people who own stuffed animals, Scoop, check your biases, all right? Check your biases.
There's no ceiling to the number of stuffed animals you are allowed to have in adulthood.
So true. Okay, on that note, thank you for listening to this bonus episode of Decoding TV. Find us across wherever you download your podcast, and also on YouTube as well as TikTok. We're at Decoding TV. On Instagram as well, we're posting clips there every week. And if you enjoy conversations like this, become a paid member at decodingtv.com. We appreciate all our paid members who help to make this podcast possible.
Yes, thank you.
Joy, thanks for chatting with me about Netflix's Scoop.
You're welcome.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host Niñas Bien podcast.
We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish, but you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast, so everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by Acast and available to all audio platforms.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.